Good morning. I'm here today on Friday, March 6th at the Mill Valley Public Library. I'm the interviewer and my name is Mari Allen, and I'm here with Jim Derich, who is graciously come in to be interviewed. Jim, can you just tell me your name, please?
Sure. Jim Derich.
And where were you born and when were you born?
I was born in Sacramento, California, on August 10th, 1944.
Okay. Yeah. And how long have you lived in Mill Valley?
My wife and I moved here in the fall, fall of 1968. I took a teaching job as a kindergarten teacher at Old Mill School, and she was a first grade teacher out in Dixie School District. And we moved here in the fall of 68.
And how did you meet your wife?
One of my cousins in Sacramento went to high school with my wife, Barbara. And
Barbara grew up in Sacramento.
Barbara
as well?
Grew up in Sacramento, mm-hmm. Also. And my cousin and I spent a lot of time together, and so Barbara had seen me with George at various times and suggested she might like to get to know me. Mm-hmm. So anyway, George set up a date with Barbara and I on January 1st of 1961. Mm-hmm. And it was the three of us.
So he was your chaperone.
George's girlfriend was not able to go at the last mm-hmm. minute, maybe. That's the story mm-hmm. anyway. But so I've known Barbara since our junior year in high school.
Wow. Yeah. And so what high school did you go to?
Went to C.K. McClatchy in Sacramento.
Yeah. In the city?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what about Barbara?
She lived across town, about 10 miles away, in what's referred to as the North Area, and mm-hmm. she went to Encina High School. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our dates were interesting for a long time because I wasn't driving at the time, and my cousin George was. Mm-hmm. So they were all double dates for 6 or 8 months, I guess.
Well, later in our interview, you'll have to tell me about your non-driving, because now you are an avid driver and automobile collector. So we'll have to get to that part of the story. But tell me about your childhood. Brothers, sisters, et cetera.
An interesting part of the part of my childhood that I value now, mm-hmm. And I have for some time, not sure that I did in the moment. There was a large extended family in Sacramento, both on my father's side and on my mother's side. And my grandmother lived with us. My father's mother lived with us 6 months of the year, and then other 6 months of the year with one of my aunts, my father's sister. And there were my mom and dad, 4 kids, and my grandmother living in a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house.
Wow.
So 3 of the grandkids, actually myself and 2 brothers and my grandmother, shared a bedroom together for half the year for a few years. Mm-hmm. Then we moved to a different home across town that was a little larger. But that experience was, I value a lot. You know, and just having that opportunity to spend that kind of time with my grandmother. And partly because of that, there was a lot of time spent with cousins and so forth as well. My cousin George, who I mm-hmm. mentioned earlier, was on that side of the family. And then on my mom's side, there was a larger extended family, and we all got together every Sunday for dinner at somebody's home. My mom's family was very involved in the Lutheran church in Sacramento. So after church, we'd all go to somebody's home for dinner mm-hmm. and playtime for the kids for the most part. So that experience with extended family, like I said, I value and appreciate what I got from mm-hmm. that.
You know, how would you describe that? What would you say? What did you get out of that experience, do you think, in retrospect?
An appreciation for and a understanding of the importance of having that kind of support system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it, well, I don't know beyond that at this point. But just, you know, I still have strong relationships with all of those cousins that I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And we make an effort to get together periodically to ensure that the relationships continue and try to extend the relationships to our kids and their kids, you know, the third and fourth generation kind of extensions. And it's harder to do, of course.
Yes, as people's schedules get busy.
And we're further apart now. I'm geographically further apart now, so it's harder to do.
And where were you in the lineup of siblings?
I was the second. I had a brother, Mike, who was 5 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
Then a younger brother, Tim, who is 4 years younger than me, and then a younger sister, Mary Lynn, who was 5.5 years younger than me. Another important part of growing up was in the winter of 1949, my mom and dad bought a summer resort in the Sierras on Silver Lake on Carson Pass, sight unseen. They had visited there a couple times, I think, but in terms of the operations, they took it on a good friend of theirs word that this would be a wonderful business opportunity and something that he ought to do. So they bought the resort. So from the summer of 1950 through the summer of 1975, that's what our family did.
And what was it called?
Kay's Silver Lake Resort. Kay's, there were two Kay sisters whose last name was Kay's, Kay, who owned the resort prior to us. And they had operated it for 35 years or something like that. My dad inherited the name Mr. Kay. We knew that whoever came asking for Mr. Kay was a very close friend. So anyway, from the time I was six, I was involved in the operation of that summer resort. And from probably around 9 or 10 years old, I would work at the resort. And that again was an experience that I appreciate more in retrospect. You know, when I was young, I'd get a milk carton and stand on the milk carton in order to operate the cash register that was on top of a bar, and sorting bottles and getting ice out of the ice house and that kind of thing, and filling wood boxes for the wood stoves in the cabins in the morning, and that, you know, emptying chamber pots. That was when I was a little older, like 8 or 10, but it was a good experience, and it was all, you know, it was my mom, my dad, the four kids who operated the resort for those 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we hired additional people. Many of them were some of the cousins from Sacramento or friends of, you know, mine or my brothers or my sisters that would come up and help with house cleaning or work in the coffee shop or whatever. But it was a good experience, and it gave me, you know, I was pumping gas and renting boats and showing people how to operate outboard motors and, you know, doing a variety of things, leading trail rides, and it was good fun.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, there were times I wasn't on the lake. There are 100 private homes or cabins, and got to know a lot of the kids that were spending time in those cabins, and of course, they were out water skiing, and they just had their days free.
Mm-hmm.
And my days weren't quite that free.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, there was some disappointment that I wasn't able to go out and do those things in the same way that they could. But you know, the experience of working with the public and having that regular interface and dealing with public and dealing with their concerns and trying to keep them happy was valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what did your parents do out of the summer season?
My father.
What was his name?
Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The resort was never, the income from the resort was never quite enough to get us through the rest of the year. So my father, when he bought the resort, became a plumber. And so during the winter, he would go to work for a plumbing outfit mm-hmm. in Sacramento. And of course, the winter is not a particularly good time for plumbers because often construction slows down and so forth. But that's what got us through the winter. And my mom worked all of the time as well.
And her name, please?
Marion.
Marion.
And she worked primarily for the state of California in various offices with the state. Actually, one of them was with the state library.
Mm.
And she was Marion the librarian. She wasn't really a librarian, but
right.
She worked there. And there were a few years when my mom would continue to work at her state job through the summer and then just come up and work at the resort on the weekends. We would leave Sacramento the day after school got out. The whole family would pack. My dad would go up in the middle of May and stay through the middle of October. That's the road opened the middle of May. The road closed in the middle of October due to snow. And my mom and the kids, we'd go up the day after school got out and come home the day after Labor Day to start school.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's it was a good experience. And the last few years, Barbara and I, my wife, managed the resort. And my mom and dad were able to just kind of take a back row seat and enjoy the last few years they were there in a different kind of way and not be so involved in the day-to-day operations. Barbara and I managed everything until we had our first kid, and then we decided we're done.
It's time to stop. Well, you said you met Barbara when you were juniors in high school.
Right.
So what happened after high school? Did you go off to college? What? Tell me about that.
Yes. The vision for me was that I was going to become an electronic engineer. My dad thought that's where the future was, which he was right. Mm. But so I went to Cal Poly at San Luis Obispo in electronic engineering. Barbara stayed in Sacramento and went to Sacramento State College. So I was at Cal Poly for just 2 years. It became more clear to me after about my fourth quarter there that electronic engineering probably wasn't for me. Actually, it was differential equations and atomic physics mm-hmm. that said, okay, I'm not doing this. And began to have more of an interest in psychology and took a few courses down there, then transferred my sophomore year to San Francisco State. Did a major in psychology with a minor in music and that kind of thing. So I graduated from, well, what did I do? I got a couple of minors. What was my other minor in? Music and math, I guess. And
what music specifically were you playing at that time?
I had never played music before in my life. I just enjoyed music. Mm-hmm. But I learned to play the piano mm-hmm. when I was there. And was more interested in music theory.
Mm-hmm.
So most of my classes, you know, some of the classes were in learning to play the piano, but most of it was in music theory and very beginning composition.
Mm-hmm.
And then continued with mathematics, with statistics and those kinds of things that I thought would be helpful, and I knew would be helpful in the area of psychology. And because I was starting late, I did 4 years at San Francisco State to complete my psychology master or psychology degree, and What happened here? I have to recreate this now because Barbara graduated early. She graduated in like January or February of 66, I guess. Yeah. Then she moved down to San Francisco and got a job as, well, that can't be. What did she do? Oh, my gosh.
You should have brought her
here. I'll tell you. Anyway, she moved to San Francisco, and then in June of 66, which was 4 years after we graduated high school, she graduated from college one weekend, I graduated from college the next weekend, the following weekend we got married.
Okay, 1966.
June of 1966. Mm-hmm. We continued to live in San Francisco for a couple of years while I continued. What was I finishing? I guess it was, I don't know, I was finishing something out. My gosh. Couldn't have been my BA because I graduated. Maybe I got two masters. I can't remember. My golly, this is embarrassing.
We can always come back and you can come back. And fill in later.
All right. So anyway, Barbara became a teacher and worked in San Francisco. And
in elementary education at that time?
Yes, mm-hmm. She was teaching first grade. And I continued in school for a couple more years. Then in 68, when I completed my teaching credential, that's why I was continuing mm-hmm. to get my teaching credential. I did my student teaching at Old Mill School and was offered a job here. And so I took a kindergarten job at Old Mill School beginning in fall of 1968. Barbara got a job, as I mentioned earlier, out at Dixie School mm-hmm. teaching first grade. And we moved over here.
And where did you first move?
We moved, actually, my brother, who was rather entrepreneurial most of his life, he owned a home in Tam Valley. And it was being rented at the time. He said, oh, you guys ought to rent that place. So we took a look at it, peeked through the windows, didn't mm-hmm. have a key or anything at that time. Looking, said, okay, Mike, we'll take it, you know.
Do you remember what street it was on?
Sure do, Alta Vista Road. Mm-hmm. And so we rented for him for just a couple of months, and then we bought the house from him in October, I think it was, of 68, and lived there for 25 years and raised our kids there through into their teenage years. We had a house fire there. We lost half the house or more in 75 and rebuilt it and had a much nicer home than we might ever have had otherwise.
Tell me about your first teaching job at Old Mill, and tell me what Old Mill was like, because we've read in the papers about, and you've been quoted in the papers, describing what Old Mill and Mill Valley schools were like in the late 60s and 70s. So tell me about that.
Mill Valley, the schools in Mill Valley in the late 60s, early 70s, and Old Mill in particular, was things were very interesting. There was a new superintendent that had come to the school district about a year before I came, so he must have come in 66 or 67.
Do you recall his name?
Jim Collins. Mm-hmm. And a new principal at Old Mill School, Dave Erskine. And Dave had a vision to create an alternative form of education that was focused on individualized instruction, open classroom concept, less of the teacher giving directed lessons at the class and things, more individualized instruction. So I would sit down with you and help you personally with your math lessons. And or with writing or review your writing. There were conferences between teachers and students. So my first job
One of my student teaching assignments was in a kindergarten classroom at Old Mill. And my second student teaching assignment was with Linda Chittenden, who at that time had a class of students that was second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade.
So Old Mill went K to six at that time.
At that time, the middle school was not the current middle school facility, but at what is Edna McGuire at that time was the middle school. And it, a year or two earlier, had transitioned to a a 6-8 program as opposed to a 7-8. But students or families had the option to remain at their elementary school for sixth grade if that felt better. So at Old Mill, there were a number of families, particularly in these multi-graded classes, that elected for their kids to stay at Old Mill. And Linda and I got on well, and Dave and I got on well, and so Dave offered me a job as a kindergarten teacher, and that was great fun. It was hard.
How many students did you have at that time? Do you remember?
Probably 30 anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Linda probably in the student teaching situation probably had 35. I know subsequently when I did a third, fourth, fifth grade combination, if you will, multi-graded classroom, I had 35 kids. The nice thing was that Dave would try to get additional help in there, student teachers or whatever. But anyway, it was an interesting time. That there was there were enough families in Mill Valley that were very interested in some kind of an alternative to the traditional delivery system for education. And so, you know, this was hippy-dippy time. And there are a lot of people who are very interested in being a part of what Dave and Jim Collins were attempting to create. Linda Chittenden had worked with Jim Collins somewhere else, I don't remember where, but he invited her to come to Mill Valley because of his belief in what she was doing and her ability to carry it off. And he brought Dave for the same reason. I mean, Dave was a change agent, and basically, you know, he wasn't there that long. Mm-hmm. He, you know, 4 or 5 years is all that he was at Old Mill, and mm-hmm. it pretty much burned out his welcome. People either loved him or hated him. Mm-hmm. And but I think that much of what happened during those years became common practice. Not all of it, certainly, but much of the philosophical underpinnings of what Dave and the group of teachers there were trying to do became a part of the mainstream in the educational program here in Mill Valley over the course of years. You know, Old Mill at that time was the bleeding edge. But, and, you know, some people paid the price, and maybe some kids mm-hmm. did. Certainly some parents felt that their kids didn't get what they needed in terms of academic skills development. But, you know, I would take exception to that, I guess. Mm-hmm. but it was a good time. It was very challenging for me. Dave gave me responsibilities that I would not necessarily have taken on if left, you know, if given a choice. And it put me into positions that allowed forced me to step up and to take leadership, which I might not otherwise have done. And that, I think, was very good for me, you know, yeah.
Can you describe a typical day in those multi-age classrooms?
Sure. One part of the day, sometimes it was the opening of the day, sometimes it would be the end of the day, there'd be a class meeting. Class meeting was a very important part of that classroom environment, and it was an opportunity for, I mean, we would sit in a circle and sit on the floor, or draped over furniture or whatever it might be. And typically, I know that I had an agenda, so that the agenda was posted on the wall, and the kids could sign up if they had things that they wanted to talk about. And so if I had issues or concerns in terms of some of the dynamics in the classroom, or if we were planning a camping trip or whatever, you know, those would be my kinds of agenda items. Kids might be concerned about not having enough playground balls or whatever it might be. And so generally would give about a half an hour to this classroom meeting. And I was not the facilitator. Typically there was a student who was the facilitator or the chair of the meeting and had responsibility for calling on people and trying to follow the agenda and so forth. And then there was also posted on the wall or the board the daily work schedule, which is typically, you know, I mean, for the most part, it wouldn't change from day to day. You know, there was writing, language arts would be at such and such a time, and math and so forth. And when kids went to work, then I would open my office, so to say, my desk, and start conferencing. And so that there was a conference schedule, and I would have conferences, 15 minutes to a half an hour, sit down with you. You had an individualized work program that you and I had, a contract that you and I had drawn up as to what you're going to do in math, what you're going to do in writing, what you're going to do in social studies. All that was specified on this contract. And then at the end of that contract term, you and I would sit down and you'd bring your math book, your writing samples, all that kind of stuff, and we'd go over all of your work and renew a contract or write a new contract for the next period of time. There were also, I mean, whole group lessons as well. And during the contract time, and, you know, when we were going over math, would be an opportunity for me to help you one-on-one, you know, if you were having trouble with subtraction and barring across zeros or whatever it might be, that'd be my opportunity to help you one-on-one develop the skills or show you the techniques in how you could address that problem. But, you know, there were times, certainly, it's much more efficient and effective to do a whole class lesson on a specific skill or topic or whatever. And particularly in, you know, social studies, if you will, you know, and you know, we spent a lot of time talking about some of the social issues of the of the time. And then another part of the day important for me was read aloud time. You know, typically about a half an hour, and would try to, you know, get interesting pieces of literature that in a number of instances had significant social messages that were worth exposing the kids to.
Can you recall some of the titles that you integrated into your curriculum?
It's pretty heavy. Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee.
Mm-hmm. And what age group was this?
This would be for third, fourth, fifth graders. Yeah. I think about this now and I go, yeah, black boy. Those two come to mind right now, but others that, you know, and there were times when another part of the, not the curriculum, but a part of the classroom experience was having regularly scheduled meetings with parents. And so maybe once a month or 6-8 weeks, something like that, I'd have meetings with parents to talk about what was happening and, you know, what their issues and concerns were. And sometimes at those meetings, you know, issues would come up relating to the language in some of these books or the concepts that were being, the kids were being exposed to. And so I was on the spot to try to justify that in some way. The other thing that I integrated into the curriculum was sex education, and it's something that had not really been a part of the curriculum before, and I may not have embraced it without, there was a parent in the community whose child I had, and she was, you've got to do this. You know, it's just so important for our kids to have this information. And she and I talked, and I said, okay. Well, we can do it. Help me out here. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, our Instructional Materials Center had a collection of books and so forth that were appropriate for the kids. This is third, fourth, and fifth grade kids. But that was another, as you can imagine, a hot-button topic for the parents. But fortunately, as I said, there were enough parents that were proponents of again, exposing the kids to this information and giving them some background, we were successful, you know, I think, and it made a difference. Still friends with the son and the daughter of the woman that helped me move in that direction. Mm-hmm. One of the nice things, I think nice and valuable aspects of what we were able to do in the classroom during those years was we did a fair amount of, we would take hikes up the mountain. Snowed one day up on the mountain, so I said, hey, let's go up to the snow. Mm-hmm. So just kind of on the spur of the moment, we were able to leave school, walk up the trail up to the mountain theater and play in the snow and have fun up there. It's hard to do that now. Today, you know, the curriculum and the demands on teachers are so intense and so tight. Teachers, I think, unfortunately, don't feel they have the flexibility to take advantage of spontaneous moments like that as much as they might like to. The other thing that we did is to, I would always do a camping trip with the kids each year. And for 3 to 5 days, just depending on what we could organize in a given year. And we would hike up to Alice Eastwood with light packs, and parents would bring all the heavy supplies up there. One year we did a bicycle trip out to Hay Press Camp out on Tennessee Valley Road, and you know, rode out there on our bicycles, and the parents brought the stuff out, and we were out there for a week. So, I mean, just things like that, which I think are a little more, obviously, more spontaneous, I used earlier, mm-hmm. but just, I thought they were important. I mm-hmm. still think they're important. And I think that many of these kids might not otherwise have had that kind of experience. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there are many summer camp opportunities available for kids, which is great.
What was Barbara seeing in her different district, that, or what did she think of what you were doing as opposed to what she was doing in her school?
Yeah. Her school, which was Dixie School in the Dixie District out in Lucas Valley, was much more traditional, and Barbara by nature is much more traditional. She was fine. And she was teaching first grade primarily, and I had the good sense to stay out of first and second grade, because it is very important, I think, that particularly in first grade, but continuing in the second, very specific skill development is so important in terms of the beginning reading skills and beginning writing skills. And I was not good at that. She is. And so she, it was a great fit for her. She understood and appreciated what I was doing here in Mill Valley and how different it was. But for her and her environment in school there was very different and much more traditional. Mm-hmm. But still, it was an interesting school. Her school was designed as kind of an open school, with an open school plan, open classroom plan, by a Mill Valley architect, actually, whose daughter I had in my classroom.
Who is that architect?
Carrie James. Mm. And so her school, the physical plant, was kind of on the forefront of emerging educational concepts of the time, just like our middle school. Mm-hmm. with not having any walls when it was originally built and having an open classroom kind of an environment. The walls have been put in place. They've been put in place in Dixie School as well. And all of the spaces have become much more discreet. But so she was in a physical environment that was really a wonderful place to teach. And because of the openness and shared space in these, I think there were six classrooms in each of the buildings, and then also its access to and proximity to the outdoors. All the classrooms opened outdoors as well as into a central common area, like it had the McGuire now.
The current Edna, which is the concept that they required. That was one of the main requirements when they rebuilt it, was that indoor-outdoor access.
And so, the curriculum and the instructional program that she was engaged in was more traditional, but the environment was more progressive. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. Yeah.
Now, at what point did you have your kids during all of this?
Had my kids. Our son, Zach, was born in 1970. Mm-hmm. I was teaching at Old Mill School upstairs in what is now the library, what then was called Room 9. Mm-hmm. It was a third, fourth, and fifth grade. And
you can say.
I'm committed now.
Yep. You have to hear this story.
Well, it just relates back to the sex education mm-hmm. instruction. So when Barbara was pregnant mm-hmm. and when she delivered Zach, photography is another thing I enjoy. So I had pictures of her pregnant, and I had pictures of Zach's delivery. Mm-hmm. And those became a part of the sex ed mm-hmm. curriculum for me in the classroom. Yes.
And does Zach know? Is Zach aware of this?
I think so. Yeah. Actually, yeah. And yeah. So that was Zach was born when I was teaching there in 1973.
And your other kids?
Kate was born 4 years later, and at that time, in 1975, I left Old Mill to go back to school to get a master's in clinical psych and school psychology in hopes of working as a school psychologist. So anyway, I was back at San Francisco State for 3 years, and Catherine was born during that time that I was in school. I left Old Mill in the summer, or at the end of the school year in 75. Our house burned down in August of 75. I was without a job. Barbara was on a shared contract. Her teaching partner the first day of school in a kindergarten classroom had a psychotic break. And it was just a nightmare. Mm-hmm. But we lived through it, you know, and everything was fine. But anyway, Kate was born in 77, just before I finished my master's program and school credentialing or counseling program. I really didn't have any interest in being... Most school psychology positions are now and were then primarily gatekeepers for special education programs, getting kids into or out of doing assessments for kids with special needs. And that wasn't my area of interest. I was interested in more of a counseling program. And just kept hoping that I might be able to create one. I made a couple of pitches to the then superintendent, Pat McDonough. And ultimately, what Claudia Trinkline was able to begin, was able to create, you know, that was the kind of, what she has created is the kind of program that I was hoping to be able to
And can you describe here. Who Claudia is, just so that
Oh, Claudia know. Trinkline Engman is currently working, is she still in the district? May not be, yeah. Anyway, back in the, it would have been, let's see, I was one at a park. In the mid to late 80s, Claudia had completed her training as a psychologist, counselor, and approached the school district about creating a therapeutic counseling program for elementary school students. And fortunately, the superintendent and the board agreed with her assessment that there was a need in the school district for that kind of support for kids and families, and hired her. Initially, it was not full-time, I don't believe, but I hired her to start that program. And since that time, you know, over the past, it's been 30 years, it's grown into an essential component of the elementary schools here in Mill Valley, and has expanded so that there are now, I don't know for sure, but I'm quite certain there are at least two full-time counselors, as well as typically an intern or two that are supporting them. Mm-hmm. And it's providing the opportunity for kids to have both one-on-one and small group therapeutic sessions with the counselor, and for the counselor to provide parenting support to those families that may need it. Parenting groups have been a part of the program over the years, so it's great.
So did you work for Claudia first, or how did you get back into the Mill Valley School District after your master's?
No. After my master's, you know, charged up and ready to go, I went back into the classroom teaching a fourth and fifth grade at Edna McGuire School. Then it was called Alto Edna McGuire. It was in what is currently the Edna McGuire School site. Anyway, I did a fourth and fifth grade there for just 1 year, and then the principal at Tam Valley School needed somebody that was willing to do a combination class at fourth and fifth grade. And my whole experience in teaching had been with multi-age grouping of students. So I went to Tam Valley and taught for 3 years there, fourth and fifth grade. By that time, they were called combination classes, not multi-age group. And they were often not by preference for the families or children that ended up in a combination class. It was a construction for convenience and accommodating the numbers of students. But it worked well, you know, and it worked well for me. And then in 85, so I was at Tam Valley for 3 years. And then in 85, I wrote a grant to the state and got funding to create a computer program, instructional computing program for the Mill Valley Middle School. And had the opportunity to buy a computer lab of equipment and develop a curriculum. And computer programs became a computer program became a part of the curriculum there, or a class, an elective class there, which I did for a couple of years.
Were you also at Tam Valley, or
No. I was full. I went full time to the Mill Valley Middle. And then in 1985, Logan Miles, the then principal at Park School, retired, which created an opening there for a principalship. And I had gotten my administrative credential. And I was in Europe with my mom and dad and our two kids for 6 weeks in Yugoslavia, which was where my father's family was from. And I had applied for the position before I left and interviewed and so forth, and got the call from Pat that, sorry, Jim, didn't get it, you know, and, you know, hang in there. So I disappointed, of course, and got to Munich on our way home and got another phone call. Well, the guy who we offered the job to didn't take it. So are you still interested? I'm interested. So anyway, I came home to a new job in at the end of August of 1985, which was principal at Park School. It was in typical fashion in Mill Valley. I got back probably just a day or two before school was going to begin, and opening the school takes a while. You know, there's a lot to be done. And it was the PTA presidents and the school secretary that made it all happen. They had it all together and made sure that things were ready when I walked in the door. It was great. And had a wonderful time. It was the best of times and the worst of times at Park School. Park School at that time was known as the Back to Basics School, 3R school. Logan Miles, who came to the district the same time as Dave Erskine, and actually they were very good friends, and philosophically were very closely aligned in many ways. But Logan developed Park School as a Back to Basics school, and there was a very strong, it was an alternative to what was happening in the rest of Mill Valley in terms of open classrooms and individualized instruction. And it was a very important alternative for many families in the community. And of course, all the teachers knew my background and experience. And I was coming from a very different place. And they didn't make it very easy for me. it was challenging the first couple of years, probably the two worst years of my teaching career in terms of, it was not fun. But we hung in there, and I was at Park for 8 years, and I would have liked to have stayed longer, but there was a decision on the board's part to move all the principals to a different school in 1993, I guess it was. And so I went to Old Mill, but the last 6 years or so, 5 or 6 years at Park were just incredibly satisfying. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to, over the course of time, to hire staff,
you know, a few teachers just decided to find some other place in the district to work other than with me, which allowed me the opportunity to hire teachers that were more sympathetic, compatible, or of a more similar philosophical point of view. And we're not, at that time, not talking about open classroom and multi-graded classrooms and that kind of thing, but a not as rigorous a 3R curriculum and program, and much more individualized instruction and more student-centered kind of approach to education. And it was great. I think that much of what happened, much of what we were able to develop and achieve at Park School, by the time I left, I like to believe, and I think there's some truth to it, kind of set the standard for the rest of the district. It was Park School that, for better or worse, and I like to believe better, changed the progress reporting system and to a more student-centered progress report. It's obsolete now, but it was good at the time. I think there's a lot more that we could have done had I been able to stay, but it's all right. I meant to Old Mill School, and I had a wonderful time there, and I was at Old Mill for 6 years. And one of the significant things that happened during that tenure was, first year I was there, they condemned the old auditorium because the roof was literally about ready to cave in, according to the engineers. So the first year I was here, they locked down the auditorium so that we couldn't use that, and then decided to floated a bond measure and decided to rebuild Old Mill School. So I think it was the second, maybe the third year, that second year I was there, I guess, maybe the third. We conducted school while the school was being rebuilt, and that was fun and challenging. My office was in a trailer on the front lawn, and we had built a plywood wooden corridor. Old Mill has two wings, and connecting the two wings was where the auditorium was, and we just built a plywood corridor connecting the two wings with little observation portholes so that kids could watch the deconstruction and reconstruction of the auditorium, and teachers would, excuse me, how do I turn this thing off? Do it that way. Anyway, teachers incorporated, kids would go to the portholes and make observations and incorporate their observations of the construction process into a daily journal or a weekly journal. And that became a part of the curriculum, just interviewing construction workers, making observations of the construction process and so forth. It's amazing what the teachers were able to put up with and what the kids were able to put up with. I'm very happy with the results there. And it was great to have been engaged in the process of making decisions for how the school would turn out and, how it would be built. And because of that experience, then I was at Old Mill for 6 years as principal, and then John Harder, the superintendent, we were getting ready to reopen Starberry Point School, and he said, "Well, Jen, you've got this experience with construction at Old Mill. We're going to be needing to do that at Starberry Point. So how about you coming?" I said, "Okay, that's fine." So a fun thing there was that there was a year that I was without a school. And I worked in the district office, out of the district office.
Part of my job was interfacing with the architects and the construction people to develop the plans for Starberry Point School. But also, I had a little dog and pony show that I would take around to each of the elementary schools, trying to describe what kind of a program we could have at Strawberry Point School, because the intention was to open the school with families that chose to go there rather than being forcibly displaced or reassigned from their current school to Strawberry Point. So I did my little dog and pony show and got a staff of and to hire staff, and staff, you know, we had five or six teachers, I think, and we achieved the objective of, you know, all of the people that came, 113 for that first year at Strawberry Point School, were there because they wanted to be there, because they believed in the teachers that were going to be there, believed in the instructional program that we were able to describe, not able to fully realize. But one of the things that we had hoped to do was to implement what's called looping, so that students would remain with teachers for 2 years. Teacher would have a student at first grade and would carry them to second grade, and then the teacher would return to first grade and pick up another class. We were able to do that with limited success the first year or two, but the political will did not support doing that, and it was disappointing. Again, that's one of the valuable aspects, I think, of the multi-age grouping that we had at Old Mill, was the opportunity to be with children, students, for multiple years. And in most cases, that worked well. I mean, there were occasionally instances where it was better for the teacher and student not to be get together for a second or a third year. But in most instances, coming back in September was like we were away for Christmas vacation, winter holiday, you know, and you'd pick up the second or third year right from where you left off. And there was no downtime, no lost time. Relationships were strong, and you're just good to go. And that's such a powerful experience, and one that I and all the teachers that initially signed on for Strawberry Point School were hoping to be able to offer. Mm-hmm. And then another part of what we knew this wasn't going to go anywhere, but we were hoping that it could be a K-8 school. Mm-hmm. But it just wasn't economically or financially viable, mm-hmm. and maybe not politically. So anyway, we never got the K-8. We had modified looping for a few classes, and then I retired.
What year was that you finally retired?
I retired in 2002, which was a couple of years earlier than I had anticipated. I was 58, mm-hmm. and my mom and dad were still living in Sacramento, and I had begun the process of supporting them long distance. In 2002, my dad would have been 92, and my mom 89, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they were needing additional support. And so I was running back and forth, and I just, handwriting was on the wall that it was going to take more time. So I retired, that indeed did prove to be the case, but you know, my mom lived to be 96 and my dad 99, and it was all was good.
And was Barbara, was she still teaching after that?
Barbara, actually, yes. Barbara taught in the Dixie School District for 10, 12 years, something like that. And Dixie, like Mill Valley, went through a declining enrollment period, so she lost her job due to declining enrollment, mm-hmm. after 10 or 11 years of teaching there. She did substitute teaching for a few years, primarily in Dixie,
but some here in Mill Valley. And then got a job at Old Mill School teaching first and second grade with Ron Davis as the principal. And she was a temporary teacher. So we'd move her into the classroom in August and literally move her out of the classroom the following June. Everything had to come out because there was no assurance that she would be a teacher the following year. So for 4 years, she was a temporary teacher, you know, and it was just in and out, in and out, in and out. Anyway, she taught at Old Mill for a few years, and then this is when John Harder was the superintendent here. She was asked to become a teacher in residence at the Exploratorium, teaching other elementary school teachers how to more effectively implement science curriculum in their classrooms. So she was a teacher at the teacher in residence on leave from the Mill Valley School District for 4 years. And that was a very good time for her, something that she really enjoyed, and gave her an opportunity to connect with a lot of teachers in Southern Marin County. And following that, she was offered a position, do you remember the ETF, the Education Task Force? Mm-hmm. Consortium of the 10 Southern Marin Elementary School Districts and High School District. She was offered a position with the ETF as a curriculum director, which she took, and she was there for 2-3 years, something like that. She was encouraged by the director of the ETF, Chris Anderson, to get her, she'd gotten her administrative credential the same time I did, but she went back to school and got her master's in school administration, and then was hired as a principal back in Dixie School District at Dixie School, mm-hmm. where she had been a teacher. So she was the principal at Dixie while I was the principal first at Old Mill and then at Strawberry Point School. I retired in 2002. Barbara retired in 2004. Just an aside here, mm-hmm. I think it's worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. One of the things that she did was able to get a California Distinguished School Award for Dixie School, but also a National Distinguished School Award for the United States. Mm-hmm. And one of the nice things that I was able to do was I was able to get Distinguished School recognition for Park School twice and Old Mill School once. And nice accomplishments. Mm-hmm. Feels good.
Mm-hmm. Now you have, tell me about your kids and where they are now.
Okay. Our son Zach is currently 42. Living in Mill Valley, living over on Lomita, half a block up the street from Edna McGuire School. And our daughter, Kate.
And does Zach have any children?
Oh. Mm-hmm. Zach has two kids. Mm-hmm. One is currently in kindergarten, West, currently in kindergarten, six-year-old at Edna McGuire. And Nate is currently a third grader at Edna McGuire.
Who looks just like you, by the way. I'm sure.
Oh, really?
Yes. Similarities are just, it's uncanny. You would always, you know exactly who Jim's grandson is.
Well, it's interesting that Nate, mm-hmm. We have pictures of Zach when he was mm-hmm. Nate's age, and Nate often thinks that that's a picture of him. Mm-hmm. A picture of Zach is a picture of him when, mm-hmm. you know, a little game we play, you know, mm-hmm. now who is this? Mm-hmm. So anyway, Zach and his wife, Thais, had lived in San Francisco. We felt very fortunate that both of our kids a few years ago were living in San Francisco and how great that they were close. Mm-hmm. And then they decided that when Nate was of school age, they wanted to think about moving to Mill Valley. Fortunately, they were able to find that house on Lomita, and they were able to relocate, which mm-hmm. is great. My daughter, Kate, is 30. She'll be 38 in June, and she's currently teaching fourth grade at Tam Valley School in room 3, which was where which was my classroom.
Wow.
When I was at Tam Valley School. And both Kate and Zach attended Tam Valley as students. Zach was in my classroom as a fourth grade student. I enjoyed that. I think Zach did okay with it. I think he's, I need to ask him explicitly about how he feels about having had that experience.
Mm-hmm. And does Kate have any children?
Kate has two kids. She has...
And what is her last name? Does she...
Oh, Kelman. Mm-hmm. Kate Kelman. Yeah. I often still default to Derrick, but anyway, Kate has two kids. Her oldest, Parker, is a first grader at Tam Valley School, and her youngest is Hadley, who is a preschooler at Mill Valley Co-op over on Shell Road. And actually, Hadley may end up in the TK class at Ed McGuire next year. So we'll have three grandkids there. Yeah. But Kate is teaching fourth grade at Tam Valley. She had taught for 6 years in San Leandro after having gotten her master's in teaching credential at Mills College. She graduated from Berkeley and then went to Mills for her teaching credential. And yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, Kate literally lives around the corner from us, 5 minute walk away. And she and her family, when they decided to move to Mill Valley, their home in San Francisco sold in a week, and they didn't have a place to go, so what do you know? They were at our house.
Multi-generational.
Yes,
again.
There you go. For 8 months, while they were finally successful in finding a place over here. And yeah, it's great to have, you know, our whole nuclear family is here in Mill Valley, which is pretty special. Yeah.
So in a few sentences, because we are almost
can be
out
a
of
challenge
time,
for me.
I know. How do you see your grandchildren's childhood in Mill Valley now, as opposed to either how your students were in the late 60s or your children, your own children's growing up here? What do you see has changed?
A couple of things. I'll focus on Mill Valley in just a second. I think one of the nice things about, I certainly hope, and I do believe, that one of the nice things about them being here is the extended family experience. You know, we see them often, and they come and go easily, and, you know, our daughter and her family lived in the house for a period of time while the kids were young, and all that just, I'm hoping, translates into something that's significant and meaningful for them as they grow up. Mill Valley is different than what it was in the, I mean, and, you know, things change, the 60s and 70s when our kids were growing up here. It's not as comfortable or easy or as safe for kids to be out on their own, to whether it's hiking on the trails or riding their bicycles. They're just so much... For whatever reason, they're so much more dependent upon their parents to get them from point A to point B to play with someone else, as opposed to being able to feeling comfortable, the parents primarily feeling comfortable with the kids walking or riding their bike. And, you know, I think that's unfortunate. I think another thing that's significantly changed when our kids were growing up here, Barbara and I were able to do, we could do basically all of our shopping in Mill Valley. You know, there was, just forgot the name of the store, but the kids' clothing store downtown, shoe stores downtown. There was literally a 5 and 10 cent store downtown next to the theater and a hardware store downtown. And so, all, you know, a family could survive with local markets, local stores, and so forth. And those kinds of, you know, they're just not available any longer. There's, you know, Goodman's is the closest hardware store, and there used to be two or three small ones in central downtown. So I think, you know, that's very different, and it gives, I think, the kids will have a different sense of services and support that are available to families in their local area. You know, it's restaurants, coffee shops, high-end clothing stores, and art galleries, you know, and that's a very different kind of experience. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you know, the opportunities for engaging in a variety of activities for kids. You know, the soccer club. Barbara was on the founding board of the soccer club. Mm-hmm. She got recruited by David Frommer walking out of Safeway one day. And so anyway, soccer and, you know, baseball, you know, Little League's been around for a long time, but it's grown incredibly. Mm-hmm. And soccer and lacrosse and all those other kind of sporting activities available to kids, I think, are wonderful, you know, and offer them opportunities to engage with their peers. And in the same way, the options that are available to kids with after-school programs and activities and the summer programs and activities that are available to kids are much richer than they were when our kids were growing up.
Some might say it's more structured.
I was going to say, that's just where I was going. Zach and Kate would play for hours. Mm-hmm. Zach would play for hours in the backyard, just digging holes, building forts, going up on the mountain behind our house and exploring, you know. And that defined who he is today to a large extent, you know. And I think the same is true for Kate. They were more dependent upon themselves to engage and to create and to find things to do with the kids next door or just on their own. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is very structured. And I think, you know, the downside of having all of these activities available is let's fill up the week. You know, let's, you know, every day of the week the kids are scheduled and structured. And it that is definitely, I would say, a downside. I think in some ways it provides some relief and support for the families, for the parents. On the other hand, it adds a level of stress, I think, for the parents in terms of getting their kids to all those different places, and particularly if there are two or three kids and they're going different places at the same time, and feeling the need that, oh, God, they need, they have to be in dance, and they have to be in music, and they have to take violin, and, you know, everybody else is doing it. And that's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of pressure for the kids, and this community, I think, Mill Valley, during our early years here, I think was much more socially, socioeconomically more diverse, less ethnically diverse maybe, but there were blue-collar workers. There was, you know, low to moderate level income people that could live here, and the super wealthy, you know, but there was a full range of people, and there seemed socioeconomically, and everybody got along with one another. You know, there were more of the service industry people were able to live and work in Mill Valley, and that's certainly less the case now. And one of the things that I saw happen over the course of my time working in the schools is a greater sense of entitlement, if you will, on the part of the parents. which translated to their kids that, what are you going to do for me? This is what you owe me. You know, we give the kiddo, we pay our taxes, you know, I volunteer, and that makes an incredible, it's a, the positive impact of that is incredible, and the results for kids are very positive. But for some of the families, I think it translates into a sense of entitlement, and you know, my child can do no wrong. And by the way, they're on their way to Harvard, maybe Stanford, mm-hmm. you know, and what are you doing to get them there?
Mm-hmm.
And so the one of the wonderful things about Mill Valley was that during the 34 years that I was working in the educational system in Mill Valley, there was always a strong interest on the part of the parents to be engaged and active and supportive mm-hmm. of their teachers, the kids' teachers in the classroom, and their kids. Kids, for the most part, came well-prepared for school and were well-supported in their school events and activities. And that, I mean, teaching in Mill Valley is like, you know, Camelot. It's mm-hmm. it's a wonderful place to teach. The other side of that is that there are very high expectations. And that's tough on teachers, mm-hmm. And it can be tough on kids. And, you know, there were too many instances where, I mean, it was clear that the kid was feeling this pressure, mm-hmm. you know, the pressure to succeed and the pressure to achieve and to be engaged in a variety of activities and so forth. And that, you know, it's unfortunate and it's difficult to see that happening. But, you know, despite all that, I mean, the educational experience in Mill Valley, I think, is hard to beat,
mm-hmm.
you know. And certainly as a principal, I had many conversations with prospective parents or new parents to the district about public school versus private and, you know, how are the public schools doing relative to private schools and so forth. And it was a very common experience for families to relocate from San Francisco or Berkeley or Oakland, where they had children in one or two kids in private schools. It made more sense to them to put that tuition into equity, mm-hmm. you know, into a home mortgage,
mm-hmm.
and be in a public school environment that was equally as good as the private schools that they were paying at that time $10,000-$15,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now $20,000 or $30,000 a year for kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm not sure where I was going with that, but it's Mill Valley's a good place,
mm-hmm.
you know, for kids and for families generally. It's just that I think people need to be aware of and sensitive to the kinds of pressures and expectations that exist, and try to keep it all in some kind of reasonable perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking here at the end of this table. You have an orange
motorcycle
helmet, and I said at the beginning of our interview we'd come back to your other life, your other hobbies and things. And so, for very briefly, tell me about your business card, which lists you, I think, as a collector of and hobbyist, and
I've been
from not having your driver's license as a junior in high school,
right? Yeah.
To what else do you do in your spare time?
Well, in 1966, right after Barbara and I got married, I think I would have to say I rather than we, traded in her the Volkswagen that her father had bought for her in college, so that we could buy our first Porsche.
Mm.
And so I had known nothing about, I through the resort in working on outboard motors and working on, we generated our own power, so I'd work at keeping the generator running and so forth, but I really didn't know a lot about mechanics. So I bought myself, went to Sears and we bought this Porsche one summer. I went to Sears and bought tools and bought a little manual on how to work on the Porsche automobiles. And since that time, I've been involved in primarily vintage Porsche. At that time, they weren't vintage, it was current. But I'm still stuck in that time period, so I work in terms of restorations on 50s and 60s vintage Porsches. And one of the other things, in growing up in Sacramento, my dad was involved in the Horseless Carriage Club. And when I was a kid, leaning up against the back fence in our yard was an old Harley-Davidson motorcycle, a Flying Merkel motorcycle, and an Indian motorcycle, some of which went to the Harrah's collection up in Reno. But this Harley-Davidson was there for quite a while, and then it disappeared. And so I started talking to my dad about it 15, 20 years ago. And he said, oh, yeah, I loaned it to a friend. So anyway, I said, well, we'll never see that again. He said, I can get it back anytime. 10 years later, he did get it back. And I bought it from him, and I restored that. So it's a 1916 Harley-Davidson motorcycle that was fun to restore, and particularly nice because it was kind of a part of the family heritage. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I've done some sports car racing, Formula Ford racing in the mid-'80s, and I'm just getting back into some time trial racing with a Porsche 911, and I'm just finished completing a restoration on a late 50s vintage California special sports car called a Devon with Porsche running gear. So I'm just I'm hoping to have it completed by the end of the summer and participate in an international event down at Laguna Seca Raceway in Monterey. And on a tight time frame, but hopefully it's all going to come mm-hmm. together. It's in the paint shop right now. So it, vintage things of one thing or another, of one nature or another, have hold an interest for me, cars and motorcycles, but got a little cash register, got some old library file cabinets, you know, just vintage things are of interest to me. And this little motorcycle I'm riding today is a 1974 Honda CB125 that's, fun to ride. Mm-hmm. People are, oh, man, I had one of those when I was a kid. Where'd you mm-hmm. get that? And I've restored a few cars. I had a 51 Willys station wagon that I recently sold to a fellow in Paris. Mm-hmm. He'd been looking for years to get one, and his mother and father, who were living in Montreal at the time, in 1951, purchased one of these Willys station wagons and drove it from Montreal to Buenos Aires. Mm. And his mother is still alive, and so he was hoping to find a similar wagon to what they drove and be able to buy it. And
how did he find it? Did you post it, put it in Hemmings?
No, actually, I had only posted it on Craigslist, and he had someone here in the States, down on the peninsula, that an acquaintance and a car buddy mm-hmm. who was on orders to keep an eye out. And so he found it and came up and took a look at it, and it was what he was looking for, so shipped it to France.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, I just enjoy that kind of stuff.
Well, it's great. But, Jim.
Time's up.
Well, I think we could go on for hours. It's been such an extraordinary privilege to listen to your story and your contributions to Mill Valley and our school district are just unbelievable.
Really, well, I hope it was coherent.
Oh, very, very okay. much so. And I think that, it would be interesting for superintendents, current and those in the future, to listen to what the knowledge that you brought and the experiences that you gave to students in this town. I would love to hear former students come back and tell their stories and hear their perspective about what they experienced firsthand in your classrooms.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things, whether it's on the record or not.
Yeah, I mean,
one of the nice things living the whole time that I've taught in Mill Valley, we lived in Mill Valley. And it was very nice being a part of the community. And it's particularly nice being retired and out of the system, but still being able to see and engage with those families and those students that I worked with, you know, as students, either as a teacher or as a principal. You know, when I go to Malaganis, you know, that whole family I worked with, you know, in one way or another. And various people around town and kids that, that I see in the community that are still here. And it's amazing how many of the kids are have been able to stay in Mill Valley. Some of them are coming back and living in their family homes, which is nice. It enables them to do that, to come back to Mill Valley. But, yeah, no, it's wonderful. And, you know, you mentioned being able to talk to superintendents. And I think that's something that, an opportunity that has been missed, not only in this school district, but in most, not building into the system an opportunity for mentoring people that are coming into the system. There was an attempt, and reasonably successful attempt, to mentor teachers coming into the school districts. But a principal often is just said, you know, that's your school, go do it. And, you know, unfortunately, I've seen instances where it, because of not having support and not having had the opportunity to share some of the knowledge about community, about politics, you know, all these things. I think that in a few instances, people could have been more successful. And, you know, there is a rich background in retired Mill Valley School District teachers and principals that will be lost soon. I mean, there'll be a whole new group of teachers replacing them as they retire.
Start recording everybody. It'll be all recorded.
It's you know, it's nice that through this project that there is an effort to document not just the school district but other elements of Mill Valley history. For me, it's the school district has been my focus, but and there's so much that simply is not. There's so much of the history that's lost. Don't understand. You know, the, my daughter, there was some, it had to do with negotiations and contracts and that kind of thing. But there was some question as to the origin and the purpose of the Wednesday early dismissal days. And, you know, that was something that we, that occurred during my tenure at Park School. And, you know, the teachers at Park were instrumental in helping to develop that concept and put it into place. And, you know, there was just, over the years, a misunderstanding, I guess, or a change of perspective, and maybe appropriate, but as to what the purpose of that time was to be used for. So anyway. So there's a rich history, and it's great if it can be captured and shared, and if people are willing to listen.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I hope Barbara can read your transcript and and listen back to what you said to see if she agrees.
Yeah, that would be interesting to hear.
But thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to turn this on now.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks.